Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shati Putra Matra Surupam Rupam Tasyaga Jamurupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natasmi Vandeham Sri Guru Shriyatapadakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamsa Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you for the reception. I think that's the best I've had in America during this visit. Last time I was here, after I gave the lecture, it was actually the next morning, I went in upstairs. I saw one sheet that had been printed out. I can't remember exactly, but I made some notes and I thought, next time I come back, I'll speak about that. I don't know if it's still up there. I didn't come to America last year, but I'd like to speak about that. It's the kind of saying that is seems to be very popular in the modern West. Wisdom sayings from wisdom traditions. And recently I was in prison, or rather I visited a prison to give a speech there in Texas. And everywhere from the entrance, there are all these sayings like, if you want to change the world, first of all, you have to change yourself, and all this kind of saying. So I saw also here one of these sayings, which seem to be very popular now in them. All these motivational or didactic sayings about how to be a better person, or how. So anyway, here it is. What was written? If you write your name in, this is what was written there. If you write your name in air, the wind will blow it away. If you write it in sand, the waves will wash it away. But if you write your name in others' hearts, it will stay there forever. So, that's wonderful. What does it mean? It seems to be a call against superficiality. You have to write your name in someone's heart, make a deep impression in people's hearts. But although it's supposed to be talking about being non-superficial, in a poetic way, we could say, it's speaking about superficiality. If you write your name in the air, I don't know exactly what it means. I don't know if the person who said it knows what it means either. or if it means anything, because I don't know, how can you write your name in the air? Maybe with a hologram or something like that. But the idea is that, if you announce your glories, here I am, folks, I've come to save you all, I'm the greatest person in the world, look at me. Or if you write it in sand, something temporary, but if you write it in someone's heart, that is something permanent. So it's the idea is that we shouldn't be superficial, we should make a real impression in people's hearts. But in the process of campaigning against superficiality, it's also superficial, in as much as it can't be understood. And when we say in someone's heart, what do we mean? It's a commonly used term. It seems there are many things which are common in many languages around the world. One that I often cite is that when someone dies, whatever language it is, people say gone away. Chalega in Hindi. Chalegeche in Bengali. Gujarati ma? Chalega. Same as Hindi almost. So any other languages? Espanol? Poe, something like that. Gone away. Gone away. In every language, people say gone away, which suggests that there's a soul, which we know there's a soul within the body. So that's one example. Another example is talking about the heart. In my heart I felt, or it touched my heart in Sanskrit, Hindi we also say, hridaya sparsh. I don't know if that's in every language. I would think it's in Spanish because it's a more romantic language than English. Is it in Spanish also? Touching the heart. In my heart I felt, I love you from the depths of my heart. And it doesn't mean, obviously doesn't mean that thing filled up with blood, which is going doot, 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 doot. In Gita we also have Hridesha Arjuna Tishtati. The Supreme Lord, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam, is situated in everyone's heart. Or actually says in the region of the heart, to be more precise. I just came to my mind. Well, there are many things like that. What is that? Hridaye balila keba. What is that? This Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote that. Hridaye balila keba. Gopi kata. What is that? Gopi kata. Hridaye balila keba sharashatya eisheva gopi dhana kata kirtan. That's just someone said in my, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that someone said in my heart that the service of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is preaching topics of the wealth of the gopis. So, hridaya, heart. So the heart refers to the depths of our self, the depths of our being, and especially as considered as the our emotions, our feelings. So we hear a lot of talk in love affairs. In fact, that we have this symbol. You see it on t-shirts, a symbol of a heart, Vrindavan or whatever. Or in graffiti, I don't know if it's still done, but when I was a kid I used to see there'd be an arrow through a heart with the name of a male on one side and the name of a female on the other. I left my heart in San Francisco. There's a song like that, something like that, is it? Yeah. So the idea of the heart, your emotional being, the depths of your being, the real person is a feeling person and speaks to our heart. So if we write our name in someone's heart, it will remain forever. The problem with this, if we're to analyze from, so far I didn't speak anything according to guru, sadhu, or shastra, so it's about time to bring that in. If we analyze from guru, sadhu, or shastra, what people identify them to be themselves is actually the false ego of identifying with the body and the mind, and falling in love. It's in this material world, it's a big illusion. And writing our name in people's heart means that, well, what does that mean? They feel great gratitude toward us for what? But people in this world, although gratitude is undoubtedly a good quality, but people in this world, due to ignorance, they feel gratitude for all the wrong things. There's discussion now again with ISKCON's 50th anniversary coming up about, well, how to make people of the world appreciate Srila Prabhupada. And a movie is being made for the public to try to introduce the public to Srila Prabhupada. This came up in a discussion in the temple, in the Prabhupada memory, the memorial weekend is there, just a few weeks ago. And that's memorial for people killed in wars, is it? I didn't bother to... In any particular war or any of the many wars that officially and unofficially America's been engaged in? World War II, Vietnam. All the wars. Korea, Vietnam, and all the unofficial wars that America is always involved in one after the other. So all the dead soldiers. But the devotees make that festival for Prabhupada, Prabhupada Memorial Festival. So the discussion was going on about, well, how can we bring Prabhupada to the public so that people can appreciate? And I made a comment, I suggested that in that meeting, that people can't appreciate Prabhupada unless they appreciate Krishna consciousness, because that's what he gave. Why is it that, for instance, Mother Teresa and Dalai Lama are so much appreciated, whereas Prabhupada, who gave something far more valuable than they could even imagine giving, is not widely appreciated because people don't know the value of Krishna consciousness? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the neophyte devotee ringing the bell in the temple during the arati of Krishna, that is more valuable both materially and spiritually than the materialists opening millions of hospitals and performing all kinds of welfare rites, because of a different quality altogether. So people, that was my contention, that people can't appreciate Srila Prabhupada unless they appreciate what he gave, which is Krishna consciousness. And people do appreciate, they appreciate that which is superficial, because they are superficial. Just to give an example, both of the names I mentioned, who are famous as being greatly saintly people, one of them has now passed on, both of them were meat eaters, or one still is. So although they talk about love and compassion and peace, they never seem to have occurred within their minds that meat eating causes so much unnecessary suffering. It's exploitation of other living beings. So they're not really very saintly at all, though they make a pretty good show of it. Whereas Srila Prabhupada's contribution is that which can actually benefit us. But people don't understand, and they don't particularly want to understand. And they like sayings like this: if you write your name in the air, the wind will blow it away. If you write it in the sand, the waves will wash it away. But if you write it in people's heart, it will remain there forever. They like sayings like this, which are very general and vague and doesn't really tell us anything. one particular point about Srila Prabhupada that distinguished him from any number of Mayavadis and bogus so-called gurus is that Srila Prabhupada spoke very clearly. And all we'll find the Mayavadis, they like to talk about love and compassion and write your name in people's hearts. And it doesn't really, it's not specific. That's the Mayavad means nirvishesha, which means non-specific. They'll talk about love, cosmic love, universal love, but nothing very specific. What is the meaning of love? If we analyze what is the meaning of love, then it has to be centered on Krishna. Love without love of Krishna is envy. Ichadvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. We're in this material world due to material desire which is concomitant with envy of Krishna. So we can talk of, people can talk of love and go to a peace conference and then they all sit down together and they never even think about it and they're gorging themselves on meat. So, writing the name in others' hearts, it will remain forever. But actually, they don't know what the heart is. Our heart, our love is meant for Krishna. As long as we deny that or ignore that or are not interested in that, then we will mistake mundane love for real love. And we don't know anything else, so we think it's real. But by definition, we may say if we write our name in people's heart, it will last forever. But by definition, it won't last forever because the present false ego or the present manifestation of false ego that we identify with, it will change. Now I am thinking, I am American, I am 25 years old, I am male, something like this. Everyone has their own matrix which defines their present existence. But it changes at death, and then we get another set of upadhis, of temporary designations, which we identify with. So, I love you forever, but wait a minute. You die, I die, and then what happened to that? Love is forever. It doesn't happen. So, the idea that you write your name in someone's heart and it will remain there forever, it's, for a start, it's, although it's maybe a nice idea, it's disconnected with reality. But actually, it's not even such a nice idea, because if we understand that we are meant for loving Krishna, then the idea of loving someone separately from Krishna is sinful, actually, because as Srila Prabhupada said, that in relation to people who criticize Krishna for being immoral, for having so many girlfriends and wives, Srila Prabhupada said that actually anyone who thinks that this is my wife, they are immoral, because everyone belongs to Krishna. So if you think this is my wife, not recognizing that the relationship is supposed to be sahadharmini, she is supposed to execute dharma with me. And of course, that's to be, in the highest sense, that's to be understood in Krishna consciousness. If one thinks I have proprietorship over one woman, that is immoral, whereas Krishna's proprietorship over every woman and every male also, and actually everyone is prakriti, female in relationship to Krishna, that is moral. So all our concepts, as long as we don't understand that everything is meant for Krishna, Please come inside. There's room to sit inside. Please come, come, come. You're welcome. So all talk of love, compassion, peace, goodness, or whatever may seem good, if it's not defined or understood in relationship with Krishna, it must be flawed. And it must be it must be, even though we talk about love and all these things, it must be intertwined with envy of Krishna, because all these ignorance of Krishna comes from envy of Krishna. Krishna bhari mukh hoya bhogavancha kare nikatastha mayatare japatiya dhar. Becoming inimical to Krishna, we desire material enjoyment, and then maya is just waiting to capture us. So we see that even people who are supposed to be very religious, their conception of religion is mostly far from that of pure devotional service. We find many people believe in God, but they think, well, the idea God is supposed to make us happy in this world, and God bless America. Why only America? Why should God be partial to the Americans? And then God will make everything nice for us here, and then we'll go to heaven and we'll enjoy ourselves, grace of God, forever. As one now dead Archbishop of Canterbury said, Archbishop of Canterbury, if you don't know, is the he's the head of the Church of England and is generally accepted as the spiritual head of all related churches, such as the Church of Scotland, the Church of Ireland, the Church of New Zealand, and in America it's the, I don't know if I can pronounce it properly, Episcopalian, something like that. So anyway, it's a dead, he's died now. Archbishops of Canterbury tend to die quite soon because they're appointed when they're quite old. But he was asked, this was published in a newspaper, that when you go to heaven, they presumed he was going to heaven, although meat eaters generally don't go, as we understand. So when you go to heaven, what do you want to do? As if it's, what does he want to do? What do you plan to do? So he said, well, I'll spend the first, this is like the top theologian. He said, I'll spend the first 100 years glorifying God and the rest of eternity enjoying myself. So mostly people take, if they think that God, there are definitely people who believe in God, as the saying goes in this part of the world. It's because the idea is that it's a matter of belief. Although in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains who he is and why we should accept what he says. He doesn't say, believe, just believe. It's a different approach altogether. So the whole idea is that, well, God's there, he's looking after our enjoyment, which amounts to maya or envy of Krishna. Atendra priti vancha tare bale kam krishnendra priti icha dhare premanam. This one verse is the essence of understanding Krishna consciousness. Of course, you also have to understand some other things prior to that, but everything is summed up in this. That the desire to satisfy one's own senses is called kama, material desires. And the desire to satisfy Krishna's transcendental senses, that is called prema. So this is the point. This is the essence. Even the desire for mukti or to get free from the suffering of this world, even that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is a beginning, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't come to promote that. He came to promote na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamahe mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhaktira haitu kitvai. Do you all know the meaning of this verse? Anyone needs it explained? You don't know the meaning? All right. It means Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed to Jagadish, the Lord of the universe, Krishna. He's the Lord of the universe, means he can give us anything, including liberation from the universe. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, praying to Krishna, saying that, I don't want wealth. Mostly people go praying for, they come to God praying for wealth. Or I don't want to be popular and have many followers. These are things which people desire. I'm not praying for a beautiful wife. I'm not praying for anything material at all. Woo, that's a tough one. You can pray for wealth if you want. I'm just saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, no, he doesn't want to hear it. Okay. It's not a, you see, if you tell people that write your name in others' hearts, they like to hear it. If you tell them, don't pray for wealth, follow it, then they'll leave. So, it's difficult to be popular and speak the truth also. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I don't want anything in this world. I don't even pray for liberation from this world. If you, Krishna, whatever you want, thy will, not mine, be done. If you want that I shall remain in this world, birth after birth, but one thing I'm praying for is that I may have loving devotion to you without any personal desire or demand of my own. So this is the platform of pure love that is eternal. And in this material world, love, it means giving to others apparently selflessly. It may be also, just like someone may give up his life for his country. But unless we understand that Krishna, he is the proper person to whom love should be offered, then our love cannot be complete and perfect. If we give up our life for our country, then we have to get born in this country again. Which is actually not very helpful to us or to anyone. So, there are many superficial sayings which superficial people think are wonderful. If you want to change the world, first change yourself. Yeah, well, it's okay. And there's nothing incorrect about it, but what is that change? The change is, the real change is that we have to understand that any change except changing our consciousness to our original non-envious consciousness of surrendering to Krishna, any other change, it's all superficial. It simply leads to our continued bondage in this material world. In fact, the very idea of making this world a better place without understanding that we are all meant for surrendering to Krishna, that in itself is a big illusion. This environmentalist movement, okay, it's all right on some platform, but even if the whole world went green, as they say, well, actually we don't want it all green, there should be yellows and blues and other colors also. But even if we were all of a sudden, somehow or other, everything became unpolluted and the ozone layer got restored and still, we have to suffer birth, death, old age, and disease. Even if everyone was very nice to each other and said sir and please and thank you and didn't cheat each other and didn't exploit each other and didn't make wars against each other, still we have to suffer birth, death, old age, and disease. And actually, the idea that we shall make a world in which there is no exploitation and everyone's nice. Imagine, John Lennon's song, Imagine. That's just it, Imagine. He made this song. You're all from Indian background and younger, you don't know. But this is very much part of the this song of John Lennon is part of the culture of the dreamers. He's of the Western world. You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. So he went on saying, imagine all the people living for today. Imagine a world with, I can't remember, anyone? No religion too. That was one of the ideas, that religion. If we can imagine a world where there's no cheating, no lying, no stealing, no bombs, no wars, no religion, and everything will be nice. He didn't say no intoxication. So it's just imagining. It won't be nice. This world is not meant to be nice. It's like the prisoners in the prison. Imagine, well, imagine if there were no wardens and no locks, and wouldn't the world be much better? But you're in prison because you deserve to be, theoretically at least. It's not meant to be a pleasant place. So the whole idea of having the kingdom of God without God, that is their idea. We shall make this world very nice. But they're foolish. They don't see that however nice you make this world, we have to die. We have to suffer. Why is that? That question should be asked. This is more important than asking the question of how to make the world green, or how to make the politicians nice and actually care about the people and not so many things could be said about the politicians. How to make people honest, how to give everyone jobs. Okay, there's space for discussing these things, but the really important thing is Brahma Jignasa. Okay, so even if everyone has a job and everyone's smiling and says please and thank you and has enough money to put beefsteak on their plates and that of those of their children, still we have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease. Why? What is the ultimate reality? Why are we suffering in this world? These are the really important questions. So there's worldly wisdom or wisdom sayings, just like that. If you want to change the world, first you have to change yourself. Nothing, in one sense, there's nothing wrong with them. And Srila Prabhupada also used to quote sayings of worldly wisdom. Of course, that's derived from Shastra, especially Srila Prabhupada. He would quote Chanakya and Hitopadesh, things like Buddhir yasya balam tasya, who has got intelligence has got strength, and the story of how the rabbit conquered the lion by intelligence goes with that saying. And there are so many things that Srila Prabhupada would quote Chanakya, that Matrivat Paradareshu, Loshravat Paradravishu, Atmavat Sarvabhuteshu, Yapashati Sapandita. It's worldly wisdom, you could say. One who sees all women except his own wife as mother, who sees others' possessions as being like some stone, in other words, not to covet them, others' possessions, who sees everyone just like himself, in other words, he doesn't put his own interest above that of others. One who sees like that is a learned person. So Srila Prabhupada would quote such things, but he would put them in the context of understanding what is our actual, our root existential necessity. What do we really need? Without understanding who we are, why we are here, how to be free from suffering, what is our real heart's need? We're talking about writing our names in the hearts of others. What does it mean, the heart? Anya hridayman, moraman vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that for other people, they identify the heart and the mind to be the same. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that my mind is Vrindavan. So, we should speak on the basis of Shastra, that which is given by our acharyas, particularly Srila Prabhupada, is the great towering personality who spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, whose books in great detail explain the science of Krishna consciousness, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. This term Srila Prabhupada would use, the science of Krishna consciousness, that is derived from this statement in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. And the result of acquiring Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam is Mukta Sangasya Jayate. By acquiring or by being blessed with and taking the trouble to cultivate knowledge of the science of Krishna and Krishna consciousness, one is released from the bondage of this material world. It's actually a byproduct of Krishna consciousness. So our basis is Shastra, and we should be very careful not to cheapen ourselves by bringing in sayings which sound very nice, but if we analyze them on the basis of Shastra, in many cases they don't mean very much. And as they're understood by people who are ignorant of Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, as it's understood by them, their wisdom is, we could say, a more sophisticated than usual form of ignorance. That's all. Without knowledge of who we are eternal, spiritual, living beings with no actual connection with the present bodies in which we are incarcerated. Our eternal relationship is with Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the fountainhead of all love and all beauty. And love means to surrender, begins with surrender to Krishna. It means giving up all material desires, personal desires, concocted desires for happiness in this material world. That is actual wisdom. This knowledge is required. There are plenty of people out there talking in high-sounding terms, compassion, love, peace, all vague. Actually, these Mayavadis, why they speak vaguely, their business is to cheat others and make people feel nice. They have a warm feeling in their heart. Oh, it was so nice to hear. But there's no call for commitment there. Because everything's vague, there's no commitment. There's no call for, yes, if we're going to love, then we have to give up all personal desire for any kind of sense gratification, even the sense gratification of thinking I'm a very good, loving person. We have to understand our relationship with Krishna. Then we can love others. Otherwise, there's no question of actually loving others. So, one thing that was very clear, or one thing that was very prominent in Srila Prabhupada, which distinguished him from so many Mayavadis and people who smile and talk gently and they're very nice. Srila Prabhupada was clear, direct, specific. A lot of people don't like that. But we have to consider, are we in the business of becoming popular, or are we in the business of telling people what they need to know? Popularity, there are so many popular swamis and this and that. But what can they actually do? What is their offering? I was in someone's house recently, Hare Krishna, in London. And there was one well-known swami featured on TV. So I listened for a few minutes, speaking in Hindi. Kisiko nafarat nahi karna. Don't feel badly toward anyone. What's he got to offer? Everyone says that. What? Smiling. What's his offering? He's got nothing specific to. Everyone says that. So be nice, be good. Okay, all right, but what does that mean? Be nice means, first of all, we have to understand who is Krishna. What is our relationship with him? Yas yasti bhakti bhagavatya kinchana sarvai gunais tatra samasate suraha harava bhaktasya kato mahanguna manoratena asati dhavatobahi. Those who are fully surrendered devotees to Krishna, they have all good qualities. And again, it might be difficult to communicate to others that Srila Prabhupada is such a great saint because, for instance, he would get angry. He would regularly use terms like fool, rascal, nonsense, animals, referring to human beings. And it might be difficult for people to say, people think that a saintly person is someone who makes you feel nice. But Srila Prabhupada was insistently preaching the truth that people need to know, and they don't want to know. So you have to speak it strongly and clearly. That is his saintliness. So it's very difficult for people to appreciate this because they want superficiality. Srila Prabhupada was actual guru. Guru means heavy. We shouldn't be light, laghu, talking in all vague terms that sound nice. We should be specific. As Krishna himself is. Very specific. Krishna says, Namang duskushino murha prapadyante naradamaha maya parita jnana asurang bhavam ashrita. Krishna says that those who do not surrender unto me, they are sinful. They're the lowest among mankind. They're foolish. Even if they appear to be very intelligent, their actual knowledge is taken away by illusion, and some of them are just out and out demoniac. Of course, that's not the only thing that Krishna says. But Krishna does clearly distinguish between devotees and non-devotees. There is a difference. It's not all the same. And some people are demoniac by nature. So, harava bhaktasya kuto mahangura manoratenasti dhavato bahi. Even if someone may appear to have good qualities, because they're on the mental platform, not on the platform of surrender to Krishna, it's all external. It has no actual meaning. And however much they may appear to help others, they can't actually help them. We can't truly help someone unless we give them that which is for their ultimate benefit, that which will be for their eternal benefit. So for instance, feeding the hungry means, okay, 6 hours later, they're hungry again. Arranging for jobs for unemployed people doesn't save them from repeated birth and death. So really helping people is to give them the knowledge by which they can come to the eternal, blissful platform. And that should be the endeavor of devotees. We should not be superficial. Simply to be nice is not our goal. So we hear that compassion, love, peace. What about giving up sense gratification? Discipline, that's required for spiritual life. If we talk about spirituality, love, of course, love and compassion are very good qualities, but there has to be discipline. That's the beginning of spiritual life. Means there has to be discipline. We have to accept some principles. We have to accept sadhana, self-control. We have to distinguish between what is right and what is wrong. The Mayavadi idea of loving everyone, accept people non-judgmentally, then there's no difference between right and wrong. It's all the same. Don't be judgmental. Everyone's good. Really? Hitler was good? If we just think about what they're saying, it doesn't make any sense, even on the material platform. So why we should stick to the clear, straightforward delineation of Shastra given by Srila Prabhupada, and that will actually touch people's hearts. It goes through the false ego to the actual heart, to the actual person, gets through to the Atma. And if people are actually honest and sincere, they will recognize and understand that, yes, this is a fact. People who want to be cheated, if they hear someone talking very vaguely about writing our names in people's hearts and loving others non-judgmentally, people who are superficial and who want to be cheated and who want to cheat others, they will think, oh, this is wonderful. But persons who are honest and sincere, if they hear Srila Prabhupada, we're supposed to speak what Srila Prabhupada said. That's called parampara. That is the principle of parampara. We hear from our acharya. We accept someone as an acharya because he speaks what his acharya spoke, and that goes all the way up to Krishna. Then if honest people will appreciate, if we tell them that this world is a place of suffering, however much we try to make it happy, the fact is we have to suffer in this world. Who can deny this? Who can deny? It's a fact. Unless people are dishonest, they have to accept this. So this is stated in Gita. And also the solution to that is accepted. Our ultimate position is one of love, peace, and happiness. But it's not possible as long as we remain in the consciousness of denying Krishna, who is the fountainhead of all love, beauty, and happiness. And in which that actual love, in which there's no sense of a personal aggrandizement or personal enjoyment. So we should cultivate this. There are so many shlokas we can write up. We don't have to bring in all these vague platitudes of New Age, Mayavadis. We've got something much better. There are dozens of people out there talking all vague things like this. I can't even, in that prison there was like, just in the short place where there were dozens everywhere, plastered everywhere, all these sayings. How to improve yourself, don't blame others, take control of your own life, and all this thing. You have to make a pledge to improve your, I don't know, so many things. I can't. They put it much more, what's the word, eloquently than I can think of just now. So it sounds just, but it misses the point. It doesn't get to the heart of our problem, of our suffering in this material world. Now, if we say like this, then people will say, well, you're being judgmental. Then you say to them, no, you're calling me judgmental. You're being judgmental. If you call me judgmental, then you're being judgmental about me. They say you're an extremist. What is the meaning of calling someone an extremist? Who defines what the center is? Extreme means you're a long way from the center. What is the center? What is the standard? According to the material outlook, Krishna is extreme. Savadhaman parityaja, mamekam sharanam raja, surrender to me only. Well, according to material, there's too much to ask. But we have to see what is actually beneficial. What is the fact? What is reality? What is reality as delineated by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita will always be extreme for people who want to define reality in their own terms, which are ahara, nidra, bhaya, maitun, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. For them, anything which doesn't allow them to continue with this is extreme. So in the minds of superficial people, devotees will appear to be extremists, fanatics, fundamentalists, that may be. But we have to explain that we can begin with this. Actually, this world is a place of suffering. That's where we can begin our preaching there. You want to accept that or not? If people don't want to accept this place of suffering, that means that they are deliberately cheating themselves if they can't bring themselves to admit this. So what can we do with such people? If we're going to speak the philosophy, they have to begin with the admission that this world is a place of suffering. So if they don't want to hear that, okay, give them prasadam, give them Prabhupada's book, sometime they might read it, invite them to our festivals. But if we're going to speak philosophy, we should speak the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita as it is, and not bring in some ideas that people might, we might think they might like that better, so they'll listen to us. But there's no point in that, them listening to us unless we tell them what they need to hear, which is what Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita. The fact that, oh, now so many people are listening. Yeah, but already so many people are listening to so many bogus people. If we think we'll get people to listen by being bogus like them and just talk in all vague terms that no one understands, then we're not in parampara. We have to speak the message of parampara. So, Hare Krishna. There's a few thoughts on something I saw upstairs 1.5 or 2 years ago. Here. Yes, please. I'm trying to say. I didn't say it. I couldn't express myself properly.
But unless we meet the basic need of the human being, how can we keep the
Unless we meet the basic need of the human being, how can we give them higher knowledge? Well, that's the point. The basic need is to know Krishna. Unless people are fed, clothed, etc., how can... That's also a point. People are hungry, they need food, give them prasadam. But if we're going to speak philosophy, which we're meant to do, then we should speak Bhagavad Gita as it is, not anything else. Yes, please.
You talk about superficial love all that time. Looking at the mother and the child, the love between them, which is, I think, is a reflection from the Golika Vrindavan, Yashoda and Krishna. If that reflection is coming on the earth between the child and the mother, is that considered superficial too?
Is the love of a mother to a child superficial, as it's a reflection of the love of Yashoda to Krishna? Yes, many times Srila Prabhupada said it's a reflection, but he said it's a perverted reflection. He also said that the love of a mother for a child is the closest to spiritual in this world. That means it's not spiritual. But again, it's on the basis of illusion. We do see that children who are raised without mother's love, as is quite common in the modern age, or a diluted form of mother's love, they often grow up more psychologically or psychologically damaged in a manner that is quite... antisocial. So, we could get into a complex discussion here about sadharan dharma, the ordinary dharma, or we could say dharma on the material platform, and of bhagavat dharma or paradharma, the transcendental dharma. So, the dharma of this world, which Krishna says to abandon that. But that is also required at some level. Krishna says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, as long as one is not fully on the spiritual platform, he should observe varnashram dharma. What we often find is that devotees who have no idea of any dharma, and they think, well, we'll abandon dharma. They know what, they never came to the platform of dharma. And so they think it's all right to... Well, if we're chanting Hare Krishna, then we don't have to bother about things like family responsibility, etc. So, anyway, that could be a complex discussion. But, philosophically speaking, the love of a mother for the child, unless she gives the child Krishna consciousness, that is called Maya, as... All right, well, let me make this point because it's important. Then you can re-explain your point, which I didn't understand, apparently. In one purport, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu leaves home, goes away, his mother is reconciled to his going away after his taking sannyas. Srila Prabhupada writes that a mother who does not allow her son to go out to search for Krishna, she's not Ma, mother, she's Maya. She's acting in illusion. Yeah, so could you please restate your point?
My basic thing is an ordinary mother gave birth to a child in the material world, and they love each other very much. On what basis you say that is superficial love between two?
On what basis is superficial? That I explained again and I said again and again throughout the lecture. Anyone want to volunteer? Yeah.
I know there's lots of examples in this material world where mother and daughter hate each other.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, it's not universal, but it's expected and hoped that mother and child love each other. And it was the norm until fairly recently in throughout the world, and still is in many places throughout the world. But the point you're saying that on what basis am I saying that it's superficial? I addressed this repeatedly during the talk, that if it's not in relationship with Krishna, it's not on the platform of reality. It's some, just like we see in the story of Chitraketu. Have you read that in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam? You've heard that? Chitraketu was the, he had one son. After many attempts, he had a son who he was very attached to. The son died as a baby, was brought back to life by Narada Muni and Parvata Muni. And Chitraketu said, "Oh, my son." And the boy said, "What are you talking about? You're my father? Which father? I've had so many births." So this strong attachment to family members is actually stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam to be maya, to be illusion. The basic attraction in this material world is that between male and female. So this verse is there in Bhagavatam. Pungsastriya mithuni bhavametam tayoraho hridya granthim ahu ato griha kshetra sutabdavitayar janasya mohoyam ahammameti. The word moha, did you hear that? Janasya moha. Ahammameti. Aham mama. I, me and mine. This way of thinking. This illusion comes from, the basis of that is the attraction between male and female, which becomes very strongly bound in the heart. And on the basis of that, one becomes attached to one's house, one's land, one's children, relatives, wealth, and so on. That is the version of Srimad Bhagavatam.
You've heard about Shravan Kumar, who had so many.
Yes. That is on the platform of Sadharan Dharma. Shravan Kumar. Ultimately, yes. Even Shravan Kumar, that if it's not in relationship with Krishna consciousness, it is his service to his parents is on the platform of Sadharan Dharma, which will lead to going to Swarga, to the heavenly planets. It is Punya Karma. But it's not Paradharma. It's not that which will lead us. It's not connected with Krishna directly, and therefore it leads us to repeated birth within this material world. So this is a very important point to understand the difference between punya karma, pious activity which leads to the heavenly planets, but which also leads to repeated birth and death, and to understand Bhagavad Dharma, which means full surrender to Krishna. There's a difference, important difference. So, Hare Krishna.